Vault Hunters, and welcome to Echoes from the Borderlands, the podcast where we explore the iconic Borderlands franchise through conversations with the writers, devs, artists, and others who are responsible for its creation and success. I'm your host, Joel Watson, and today we're talking about the sequel that isn't, the prequel that mustn't, but does anyway. Borderlands, the pre-sequel. I'm joined by boss designer Josh Jeffcoat, mission designer Matt Higgins, and project producer James Lopez. Welcome, gents. This is going to be an Australia-heavy episode.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to get that out of the way for sensitive listeners and viewers.
Good thing you've got an Australian here.
Oh, I didn't know we brought one.
Sorry about that.
It's coming from inside the office.
Is that a good place to start, talking about the pre-sequel? Is that the unique aspect of this process from a dev perspective?
Absolutely, for sure. Since the project began in Australia, the genesis of this was the 2K Australia team.
Yeah.
And they pretty much kind of hit the ground running after we finished Borderlands 2.
Borderlands 2 has ended, and Borderlands 1, unexpected massive success. Borderlands 2, bigger, better in every way, and continues going strong to this day. The pre-sequel, what makes you go, you know what, there should have been a game between those two?
My understanding was that we just didn't want to have it be Borderlands 3 because we weren't ready for the next huge tech change. And we really wanted
between console generations.
Like, we just wanted to make more Borderlands.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't want it to be Borderlands 3. We kind of had to go the opposite direction, and that's how we ended up at 1.5.
Yeah.
Accounting standpoint, you went, we did 1 and we did 2, we're not doing 3. What's left? Everyone got in a bunker and thought for a long time.
I'm pretty sure that's actually how it happened, like, and then literally,
someone thought, yeah. 1.5.
Yeah. Like, the term pre-sequel didn't happen for a year or two later.
Yeah.
After production. Like, it was literally like, hey, this is 1.5. Let's tell a story in between and see if we can link anything up or, you know, have some fun, go to some new places.
There are a lot of kind of new things introduced in Borderlands 2 that weren't in the first. The big one being the story of Handsome Jack and where he came, how he came to be on Pandora.
That seemed like an obvious ask, right? Like, you don't introduce a character like Handsome Jack at the point that we meet him in Borderlands 2 and have no questions.
Well, and also, like, on the development side, we knew that we had a really strong antagonist with Handsome Jack. Like, it was very clear, like, when you go back and you play Borderlands 1, like, who the antagonist is a little more blurred, but with 2, like, it's very clearly Hyperion by extension Handsome Jack, or Handsome Jack by extension Hyperion. And we knew that we could tell more with that character, but spoilers, you kill him at the end of BL2.
I got to do that.
Yeah.
Actually,
I made that.
A lot of your bosses from Borderlands 2 are the playable characters in pre-sequel.
Yeah.
So
we
kind of see their
several of those characters,
well,
rolled them backwards in time and decided to let the players see the world through their eyes.
Yeah.
It was a really neat thing.
Because you just want empathy for villains.
Well, one of the things,
Star Wars.
There was a lot of,
I take back what I said about Australia.
There's so much that happens though, like between BL1 and BL2 that, you know, like, there's a lot of things visually in the trailer for BL2 that really kind of, like, I think, like, rocked our fans, because suddenly there's a space station, there's this interesting new villain. Things have changed. Like, Pandora's also, like, greener. There's all this other stuff going on. And, we knew that there was plenty of story that we could tell to kind of connect those dots, especially after it was so clear while we were working on the DLCs for BL2 that people still really wanted more Handsome Jack content.
Right. You create a character that dynamic and who steals every scene he's in. Mm-hmm. It's also excellent performance as well.
Yeah, Damien's, like, great.
Outstanding. Side note, and I know you know this, don't you think he sounds like the You Don't Know Jack guy?
Is he? If you told me he was, I would believe
I thought
you.
He was, and he's not.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I was like, oh, my, oh, it's him. Yeah. It's not. But it really does sound like him. Children, You Don't Know Jack was a game we played on CD-ROM.
400 years ago.
You used to take a game, you used to put it in your computer, like this.
And if your buddy had it, you could copy it, and then you could play it. Because they hadn't figured out that people could do that yet.
Yeah. Let's not encourage that.
And we're saying you're a bad person.
Yeah. If you were a crime guy, you could copy that.
Oh,
disc,
a mafioso. You know?
Yeah.
Just a broke bad kind of guy. Speaking of, this is the game where we see Jack break bad. This is his Walter White moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are moments scattered throughout, almost as if by design, I would say, that show Jack's evolution and how much he enjoys hurting people. Mm. That seems to be every character moment for Jack in this story is, I'm the hero. I enjoyed grinding up those orphans to make a smoothie. Like, yeah, that was delicious, nutritious, fun.
Yeah.
It's a pastime. Is that what, how does that aspect drive what you guys do? Because none of you wrote this game. So is the story what drives the mission? Is the mission what drives the story? Mm. Or is it always, in a perfect world, in tandem?
I like to think it's in tandem.
But you'd be wrong, is it?
Oh, no. I think a lot of the time we do manage that. especially for, Handsome Jack, starting off as kind of this nobody in Hyperion.
Right.
And then getting that little taste
of programmer
blood.
Is a nobody?
Wow. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, starting off as a nobody, has to kind of save the station himself, left by higher management to kind of fend for himself in that situation. And then as players try to get him back to the space station, gets his first kind of taste of blood.
Yeah.
Killing
and
Mareth.
It, and it suits him.
Yeah, he likes it a little too much.
Yeah.
And then, it kind of just escalates quickly from there.
It feels like the story of someone who is like, I'm setting off with a somewhat selfish, kind of altruistic goal.
Mm.
And then, gets blood on their hands and goes, hang on, new plan.
So when we were thinking about the story for this, like, one of the things we kind of went back to is like, okay, well, what do we say about Jack and BL2? Because we need to make sure that we are consistent with those things. But we're also like, okay, well, what were the things that happened between 1 and 2 that aren't explained? Cool, this is an opportunity to tell those things too. But also, the biggest challenge was that everyone know that Jack is a monster. And so, like, wherever he starts, he has to end at that point.
Right.
Or at least at the beginning of that point where you go, okay, I see where he goes.
He's got a bar to get to. Yeah.
And that's really tricky because you have to start with someone who, especially as a, who we knew we were going to do a playable character version of him also with the doppelganger.
Right.
Like, we knew that you would kind of have to like this guy enough to be around him for 20 to 25 hours.
Right.
You know? So, there's a real challenge there. Like, they have to start off relatable in some way. But also, you kind of have to see pretty quickly that there's something not quite right about this guy, that like maybe this intense situation was the pressure cooker to bring out like the worst in him that was always kind of there, but would have maybe never really surfaced if he just stayed a programmer.
Yeah, if he'd stayed on a path, maybe we never hear from him ever again. Mm-hmm. I would have just really quick call back something you just said, Matt, which was he's a programmer, a low level, he's a nobody, left to his own devices by management. And I feel like there is hard won experience there, not at Gearbox.
Well,
never
not by
at
me
Gearbox.
Either.
No.
Never at Gearbox.
Not.
And maybe not even with you. No. But there is something about that. Borderlands often takes the outcast, the recluse, the cast off of society, the person that might feel that way, and elevates them to something fantastical, sci-fi, action. Hmm. Is Jack the ultimate, like, is he the Fight Club boy? Did he get up from his desk and change his life by taking over a moon base?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am Jack's overwhelming ego.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Okay.
Not only on like the individual level, but I think Borderlands is always had that kind of exaggerated look of corporate culture and
absolutely
corporate infighting and corporate
warfare.
Yeah, corporate warfare.
Yeah. And there's something to be said that all of the action in the franchise is driven at first, or at least ignited, by corporate greed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you go back to BL1, it's like all of the detritus that you see is from like Dahl and everyone else just like launching these ships onto Pandora and then going, cool, see you later.
Yep.
We're out of here.
Yeah.
Good luck.
You know? There's a, I've been left, the money dried up and I've been left to clean up a mess that isn't mine. Mm-hmm. Sort of constant refrain.
Yeah.
from most of the Borderlands games. And in this one, Jack is our audience surrogate into that world. He's got job goals. When we meet him.
Yes.
He has job strife. He gets fired. He tries to get his job back for a time. Like there is a working man's story. There is a Rush song that you could write about this. Like there's
with just a little strangulation.
Yeah.
Just a hint here and there.
Maybe some light eyeball scooping also. Yeah.
And lasers.
Yeah.
Those are all three elements of Rush songs though, so that's fine.
That's fair.
Talking about other characters, this is the first game where Claptrap is playable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Claptrap the Frag Trap. Mm-hmm. Does anybody have any experience with that? Was it hard to, I mean, you can't climb stairs.
Oh, we replaced most of the stairs with ramps in the game.
That's yeah. accessibility.
Plus the Oz Kits, you know, nullified stairs also, which was not just a convenient decision at all.
The low gravity certainly helped alleviate those problems, but that is a thing that we had to talk about and come up with solutions for.
Was it done for Claptrap?
Not the Oz Kits, but things like ramps everywhere instead of stairs was for Claptrap. We explored at some point some technological, like, he can roll anywhere, but if the stairs are there, we literally just won't let the rolling happen.
Right.
And from a gameplay standpoint, that felt terrible.
And then also no, like, hop, 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 hop.
Yeah, it would just feel awful.
Sure.
You know, on the topic about Claptrap's a playable character, like, the whole genesis for that was kind of like a long shot for us, because by this point, we'd already released two games that had sort of, like, established a... sort of like a formula. You've got your gun haver, some sort of commando soldier turret guy.
Yeah.
I'm hoping the original name for these characters is gun haver.
Yeah, they were all strong bad jokes.
Wait. Really?
No.
Okay. No.
Cuz why not?
But you know, you have gun guy, you have a siren.
Mm-hmm.
You have a sniper character, mm-hmm. and then you have some sort of melee berserker type class, right? So the last one, of course, being someone like a Krieg or a Brick, something like that. This time around, though, we're like, okay, well, introducing sirens is a really big deal. And this takes place between 1 and 2. So, like, it'd be really weird to have, like, a siren that somehow isn't mentioned in 2. So that's how we landed on Athena. And then we had our gun haver with Wilhelm.
I love gun haver.
And then we kind of had this sort of sniper gunslinger surrogate through Nisha. And they were like, okay, cool. Well, who's our fourth? Is like, who's our melee person? Like, well, Athena also has a sword. So she kind of ends up in this weird sort of like hybrid thing. And then Claptrap kind of keeps being like this oddly important character in weird ways. And we were kind of like, well, what if it's Claptrap? And it was, the reason it was a long shot idea is that Claptrap is really sort of like explicitly like a co-op character.
Right.
And of course, like, this is a big co-op game.
He's not going to be the protagonist of the main story.
It would be outrageous if he was, you know.
It's actually hilarious at any point that you're going through this game to think about what if this was Claptrap.
Yeah, what if this was his story?
Yeah.
You know, but we pitched this idea for it. Matt Armstrong, who was the creative director on that project, working alongside Jonathan Pelling, they had this idea for Claptrap as a playable character. They pitched it. And it got a lot of traction. And then at a certain point, we're like, well, we really need to lean into this, which is why if you're in single player and you select Claptrap, it goes, hey, oops, you that was close. You almost selected Claptrap. Are you sure? You know,
at least 3 times.
Yeah. Cause we wanted to make sure you really get, like, you know, understand what you're doing, which also helps us go like, hey, you're not really supposed to play this guy. This is a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
You know,
but you're allowed to.
Yeah, of course. It's just really hard if you play it solo with them.
Yeah.
Because his whole thing is like action skill roulette.
Right.
And so it's all randomized. So like the idea is that this is the character you play in a co-op group because it can help everyone. And it's also sort of like a wild card thing. So if you get like a bad draw, the rest of the people can kind of like balance you out, which is sort of like innately a Claptrap concept anyway.
Yeah.
Man, when we were.
Even the bad effects also have good effects though. Like the one that you can't stop bouncing with a rubber duck.
Mm-hmm. That is the best that thing we have ever done.
Yeah.
Back at the enemies.
It is the dumbest thing we have ever done. So but I love it.
I do like his high five as well. But if you're playing single player, if an enemy hits you, that still counts as a high five. So
so he brings
makes friends everywhere.
He brings an unnecessary difficulty, but also a delightful scampish nature too. Every aspect of the game. Other favorite characters. We've got Colonel Zarpadon. We've got Janie Springs. Anybody have any memories of working with or on or through those characters?
I mean, I ended up making the Zarpadon fight.
Mm.
Her transition from mech to glowing-eyed purple badass was not bad, Josh.
Oh, thank you.
I liked that.
Thank you. I worked really hard on
good
that.
Good job.
Yeah.
I was thrilled at how much traction we got with Genie because it was really important to us at Gearbox to inject like the sort of like that Aussie vibe into it. We didn't want it to just be, you know, like a sort of like a game made by Australians that feels sort of like explicitly American or just like different sort of like Western culture. And so having characters like Genie in there was really good for us. And we had a sort of like a weird overlapping development schedule with the original Tales from the Borderlands. And we had some traction with pre-sequel that ended up gaining some momentum over in Tales, which is really, really exciting because we were excited about the idea that we could sort of like broaden the reach of pre-sequel and really just like the franchise in general, but taking characters and arcs and kind of like moving them back and forth between them was really cool. It was also like nail-bitingly terrifying from like a recording standpoint because we had like overlapping schedules. We weren't quite sure who was going to get out first and it might not make sense depending on who got there first, you know? But like we got Janie in there. The fight between Athena and Brick and Mordecai takes place in Tales, but it's like, it's an immediate callback at the beginning of the pre-sequel. But it was just kind of cool to be able to kind of like cross-pollinate like that.
Yeah. And now, again, back on the Australia thing. So this game is a co-production from Gearbox and 2K Australia. You were in Australia at the time? And it sounds like you're from there.
Yes, I am. So I was at 2K Australia working on another project while pre-sequel is being dreamed up by guys here and over there.
What level of actual physical cross-pollination did we experience? Did Gearbox send people to Australia? Did you send people here?
Yeah, no. We sent a group down for 2 weeks initially to kind of like meet and greet with 2K Oz. And we ended up doing a thing where we were kind of visiting each other like I think like every few months.
Mm.
And we had a designer who stayed down there long term named Drew Mobley.
He was there for about 3 months.
Yeah, now, he was there for a while.
Yeah, taught us all how to use all the mission tools and the level editor. And
I thought you were going to say taught us all how to talk American slang, how to eat a cheeseburger. I don't know. What do we do here?
No, anything Aussie good? Slang's nothing. Amazing.
What Aussie slang can we offer that is not offensive or is only slightly offensive?
Oh, maybe drongo?
Yeah.
I think that was in a few of the lines in the game.
So is the moon of Elpis is populated by Australian voiced NPCs. Is that by necessity for who was available or like you're saying, a choice to bring everybody in?
Yeah,
That was actually a really fun accident, I think. When we were reviewing here at Gearbox in Texas, some really early test builds of the game, all of the temporary dialogue in the game was voiced by employees at 2K Australia. And so every mission was just people speaking Australian.
Australian.
Yeah.
And we had to have it localized to American.
But we kind of got used to that. And one day we just kind of realized, actually, wait, this makes complete sense. And we should just run with it.
Yeah.
And we just embraced that. And we're like, this game is Australia the game.
Mm. Yeah.
So
I know we say Oz for Australia. Oz packs. Is that
Oz
a,
kits.
Oz kits.
Yeah.
Oz is kits. That
they
a,
was another, started as a...
That was another sort of
they were
accident.
O2 oxygen kits.
Yeah. That's literally what they are. It means in the UI, if you look carefully, it says O2. It's oxygen because it's compressed air. You breathe it. You use it for your jetpack and all that kind of stuff. But the font was weird, and it looked like it said Oz.
So does this come from a VO record where someone goes Oz, and it's like
I don't know. I just at some point because it said like if you were just reading it, it looked like it said Oz, and that was another thing where at one point we were just like, fuck it, that's what these are.
A lot of things come out that way.
Yeah.
Right, where it's like you're in development, you're like, that's an accidental colloquialism ends up becoming like the real thing.
Yeah,
right. What was it like dealing with the time difference? Because what is it like, 18 hours?
Oh yeah, 18. And I think it gets worse when the time changes.
Because
here you move an hour one way, and we move an hour back.
That's so violent.
Is that how that actually works?
Yeah, it's the opposite.
Oh, it's day before. Man. When we do daylight savings time, it's day before yesterday in Australia.
Yeah.
And a year earlier.
Yeah, trying to deal with the back and forth on that was pretty brutal at times. Just any question you had, like, you're not going to know until tomorrow.
Although I think it worked pretty well for the file sharing.
Yeah.
Because while we were at the office, we were asleep. And then the opposite. So we kind of hand the files.
So you're uploading 40 gig files and like pulling
So we're not fighting
overnight.
Over the same content.
Yeah.
So I guess there was one benefit to that. But
how do you do? So this is very pre. Everybody is very online for meetings times. So
that's true.
Was there ever a like stay up until 6 a.m. so you can talk to people and then go to bed?
So we would we would usually do like a call at the beginning of the day and the end of the day sort of thing, because like, and around that amount of time, people had gone home, gotten sleep, come back sort of deal. Like you said, though, like it did get really tricky around like time changes. But once we've about half the projects, like we'd have like a kickoff call at either 10 or 11 a.m. our time, and then do one around like 6 or 7 p.m. before we leave. And that way we kind of catch each other kind of coming and going.
That it's interesting because you are working as sort of a single unit, literally separated by possibly as much distance as we have on the planet.
Yeah. Like
pretty much. Dallas is about as far as you can get.
It's about as far, right? Yeah. Like maybe Abilene, Texas would be further. But we're not going there. Speaking of mistakes turning into permanent parts of the game, Janie Springs' name also was not Janie Springs.
Well, she started off as Janie, and then at some point the writers decided to give her a
last
name. More of a Borderlands-y sci-fi kind of name, and she's kind of an engineer, so we decided on Springs.
That's what they work with.
Somewhere along the line... a document wasn't updated, or I'm not sure where it was.
Should have been Springs.
Right. Just Springs.
Just Springs. Just, yeah. But now she has both names. So,
And as far as any other characters in the game, anybody that sort of has an impact on not just this game, but Borderlands as a whole, do you feel like there was any heavy lifting done other than Jack, story-wise, that resonates through the whole franchise?
I mean, potentially we could talk about Lilith. Because from a certain point of view, you could say that she is hugely responsible for twisting Jack and really sealing the deal into he's just this evil dude.
She does punch his face almost off.
Yeah.
Face off.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. But I mean, he obviously is never going to forgive her for that. But like, that's really the moment of no return, I think.
In a lot of ways, is it fair to say that Borderlands is Lilith's story? When it's not Jack's story for a while.
I mean,
Claptrap's story.
Probably becomes that way in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I mean, if someone said that.
For running plot threads through the whole series, I mean, 1, 2, and 3. Yeah.
Yeah, because she starts off as like a mercenary vault hunter, you know, and then she becomes a sort of like leader of a resistance, ends up taking on like corporations and like mega sirens and things like that. Like, it's a pretty big
story. I think you could also say that the siren thread is what runs through the whole thing and carries the bulk of the true narrative of Borderlands. Jack is adjacent to that, where his needs line up. Lilith is obviously, you know, dead center on that, and Athena is involved in that as well. Claptrap's not. So if you've got three pillars of Borderlands narrative, it's almost like badass, serious, and dumb. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
That works? Yeah. That works for everybody involved.
It's something there for everybody.
What's the dumbest thing you put in that game, in this game?
Fight.
No. It's dunks. It's got to be dunks.
It's the dunks, yes.
Dunks, yeah.
Yes.
I had absolutely nothing to do with the creation
the basketball episode
of this side quest in the game, but it is my favorite in the entire game.
Tell me about it.
And it's completely stupid. You just find a dude and he's like, you know what? I'm going to do the coolest slam dunk ever. And then he dunks so hard he goes to space.
Yep.
That's the entire...
Just flies off with it.
He just up into space.
He does have a little cameo in Borderlands 3.
Yeah.
Still flying through space?
Yes.
Yeah.
Frozen solid space. In a block of ice, just orbiting the planet.
I think he smashes into the Sanctuary 3.
Does he actually hit the ship?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Poor dunks.
Yeah.
But it was great. And like that's the whole point of like the side missions also, is to like to do like... wacky shit that wouldn't make it.
Was that Drew's mission?
That was Drew.
Yeah.
Aided and abetted by Anthony for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, God, I love that mission. You know, you asked something about the narrative. I wanted to jump back to the first thing. Like, there was something I think that gameplay wise that we added that was really, really satisfying that we done ever so slightly with the Tiny Tina DLC, which was having the sort of like call outs from the playable characters while they're going through, so that it feels like you're more actively experiencing the story than just playing and just looting and shooting. You know, like the characters kind of react to what's going on around them. Jack and various mission givers will have like custom audio based on the host playable character. So, you know, if you're running in playing as Wilhelm, he'll say specific things about that. If you're Nisha, he'll flatter you. If you're Athena, he'll talk about like your background, things like
that. And is that a first for the franchise?
It was then. Yeah. I mean, and we kind of rolled that moving forward, probably to the chagrin of our VO recorders and localization experts, because
it was a lot of work to set that up.
I mean, we quintupled the amount of VO because of it, basically. So, yeah. but like, it's great because it improves immersion, and we've
absolutely
been doing it ever
since
then. Seeing each of the characters' point of view, or like their reactions to what's going on in the story as well.
It encourages multiple playthroughs.
Oh, for sure.
And as everyone knows, you have to pay each time you play through. So we like that.
Well, and we also added in like extra narrators. Like Torg starts having call outs and things like that. Like we really just kind of try to see how many different ways could we tell the story.
Yeah.
With regards to things that were added to this game for the first time, let's talk a bit about the new gameplay mechanics. Any new weapon elements, boss elements, anything that you couldn't do in a Borderlands game that you could do in the pre-sequel.
Oh, man. Oh,
the
butt stomping. Quite a few. Yeah, butt stomping is probably my favorite addition for combat.
Especially the ones with the elements that send them flying.
Yeah, doing Nova explosions. Yeah. And
you did add at least two Mario-based combats to the pre-sequel.
You mean by landing on people's heads?
Butt stomping and then the low gravity. Is there a Tanuki suit unlockable in a DLC?
I mean, we have it in dev, but we can't release that.
So other than those physical, abilities, you've given your players new ways to move, new ways to navigate, new ways to. What about the ways they fight? What did you do with weapons in the pre-sequel?
We added
laser energy weapons.
Yeah. The laser editions
the beams
were pretty
and
huge.
The rail guns.
That ice. And the cryo freezing. Those interacted really well.
Right.
Because all that was done by code at 2K.
Yeah, there were some programs in 2K Australia.
And they did an amazing job with all that ice stuff, because ice plus low grav plus lasers meant you could carve frozen enemies you were sculpting them.
Ooh. Well, and I remember that. Into the low gravity, seeing all the bits go.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. I remember when they showed us the tech demo for that, and it's like, hey, if you slice this way, it goes that way.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you break it this way, it goes that way.
They did a
lot
of work to make that happen.
Yeah. Just so we could find cooler ways to kill people.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cooler, ice, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're welcome.
What specifically, Josh, I want you to tell me, did you work on the eyeball? Because it seems like the kind of thing you would have enjoyed.
In the big laser bay?
Yeah, big laser eyeball.
Oh. Yes, I was directly responsible for a lot of that sequence.
How is it? Spoilers, or not spoilers, clarification.
Yeah.
I recuse myself by saying I've been friends with Josh Jeffcoat for almost 25 years. When I see the space laser eyeball, I go, well, there's my boy.
Yeah, that's
me. There he is. Is that how you felt like you put your mark on this game?
I mean, that entire level, me and Brad Surzega kind of roughed that whole thing out. I ended up doing a lot of the mission scripting in it. But when we were trying to figure out, like, okay, we know we're going to have a big fight with Zarbadon, and we know that this is going to be on the big laser assembly, and we know that we want to destroy it, but we want to make it special and, like, kind of feel interesting. And we were trying to figure out, like, how can we tie all this together? And we basically were like, well, hey, there was this giant blob thing at the end of Borderlands 1 that no one really knows what that
tentacles.
Was, but it had a giant eyeball in the middle of it. What if that was where the laser was coming from? And I guess Matt said we could do it.
It also gives you that handsome Jack element of perhaps this is not what the eyeball wants to be doing, and I've co-opted for my own
and we wanted to whenever you like you open up the shielding around it so that you can actually see the eyeball itself, and every time it fires it doesn't look happy.
No, it seems upset.
It definitely looks like it's in pain. And we were trying to like kind of sell that story he harvested this from the carcass of a giant monster and is still using it in a really sick way.
That's upsetting.
I try to do that whenever I make games, is upset players. Is that,
how can I make someone go, oh?
We had a little bit of that in that game too, like with like the ship AI that, you know, that you
want. Oh, yeah.
Oh, Robert made that.
Yeah, we have like some heavy beats where it's like, kind of reminds me a little bit of like the third and fourth Colossus in and Shadow of the Colossus, where you're like, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
Felicity didn't want to go into that mech.
No.
Yeah. That is...
That, I think, is probably the first, like, unforgivable thing Jack is responsible for in that game. Like,
the most upsetting thing in that game is
Felicity, dark Felicity, Felicity Rampant.
Yeah.
Begging not to be confined into either a boring machine or a machine of war.
Yeah.
Or just to be controlled again. I think her deal is that she realizes I'm being controlled for, I don't know, sexual reasons in one way and then combat reasons in another. This is a good time to remind our Vault Hunters that Gearbox and 2K are offering a Borderlands bundle that contains every Borderlands game to date for one great price. It's called the Borderlands Collection Pandora's Box, and it's available now. Of course, podcast time is relative, and your present may very well be our past, but it's still available now. Just everywhere. Xbox, PC, PlayStation. Tell me about Drew and Kangaroos.
We mentioned this earlier that as a kickoff, we had this big sort of gathering of minds down at the 2K Oz office down in Canberra. And when this idea had kind of been pitched, I remember talking to my boss at the time, a guy named Aaron Tebow, and he was like, hey, I think it'd be a really good idea if like we sent like a group down there to like meet and greet and do workshops. I was like, sounds great. How long do you think you want to do that for? And he's like, well, what do you think? I was like, well, I think like a couple of weeks would probably be like really impactful, because like if it's just a week, you know, considering how long the flights are, because it's basically like a whole day to get there. I was like,
you would lose 2 days of your week just traveling.
You lose 2 days of travel. You lose at least 1 day to feeling terrible.
Right.
So like, I was like, yeah, 2 weeks or so sounds good. And this is like during our summer. So people were kind of generally available anyways. And Aaron was like, all right, sounds cool. And I was like, oh, by the way, like, we should probably send spouses down, because like, spouses tend to get pissed whenever they don't see like their significant others for like multiple weeks.
Right.
So,
that's kind.
Yeah. Yeah. I like my marriage. So the whole trip was like a wild ride from the beginning. Cause like we had this layover flying from Fort Worth, you have two options: direct flight, if you're lucky, or you have a layover in LAX, which is when you're unlucky. And so we had a layover in LAX. We narrowly missed our connecting flight, so we're stuck for 24 hours in LA, which is a cool place to be stuck for a day. But we did like we went down to like the beach and then hopped back on our plane. So like, we're all sort of like crispy from being out in the sun all day. And then we're on the flight for like another 14 hours. We show up and we landed before we left America somehow, which is really, really strange.
Yeah. Time zone.
And
you leave on a Wednesday, you get there on the previous Thursday.
It's bizarre. And then we got there and it's their winter. So it's cold and rainy. And we just came from like the land of like forever sunshine.
Sure.
So like, it's really, really weird. We're in Canberra for a couple of days doing the meet and greet, starting to mind melt. But it's like that week that we landed was like the last session of parliament before they broke. And
they wanted you involved?
No. Oh. That would have been awesome.
Okay.
Irresponsible, but awesome. The thing was is that we had our hotel reservations for the 2 weeks except for one night, which was the night before the final session of parliament, and we were basically exiled to a place out of town. And we're like, okay, cool, we're all tired.
I like that, but it has, the reason of the exile is that it's the session of get these video game developers out of here.
Like, get out of here.
We're trying. So, that is how they talk in Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, see? So we get out of town, and it's like Wolf Creek. It's like out there.
Oh, middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere, very rustic, and we show up, and a very, very funny thing happened, which is we didn't have reservations for that night. And the reason we didn't
sleep with the wolves
was because there's I don't remember what date we were out there, so I'm just going to make a number up. It was like, we thought we had it for like the 6th the 7th of June. And they thought that we had it for the 6th of July.
Right.
Because.
Oh no, the date standard.
Because the date standard's different over there.
Oh.
Literally no hotel in town had room, especially for 14 people. But this place...
This is so much worse than I knew.
Dig a hole.
This place was kind of like a lodge.
Get in it.
And so like I knew they had rooms. I could see them. But it was like end of season, so like there's no one in there. And I was like, huh. And so like I'm trying to figure out what to do. We're trying to call home. It's, you know, it's the middle of the night back in Texas. And so I'm like, hey, like, what if I gave you money for one of these rooms that isn't being used? Like, and they go, oh, well, like with the dorms? And I'm like, yeah, whatever that is. So it's basically it's just like a really big room that we stay in for the night. But we're all kind of like in this moment of despair because we're jet lagged, we're tired, we're thirsty, we're hungry. And at a certain point, we lose Drew, who went to go get fresh air.
What was Drew's role?
Drew was sort of like a multi-class designer on the project.
Level design and mission design.
Okay, yeah. So none of those skills apply to Outback survival.
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Just making sure.
No. So while we're trying to sort all this out and like a couple of us are trying to like manage emotions because everyone's really, you know, kind of frustrated right now. There's a moment where I go, where's Drew? And like, oh, he went that way. And we go and we look and Drew is like off on his phone on a hill, like going down it. And then we see like just a big old blob just go hop. And it's like a 6 foot tall kangaroo. And then we see another one hop. And we see that there's kind of just like slowly start hopping out of the trees. Oy. And we're like, oh no, Drew's about to die.
Yeah, they hunt in packs.
Yeah.
Other girl.
And like, it wasn't just like
have two on each side.
It wasn't just like a few. We're talking like over a dozen kangaroos just like came out of nowhere with their kids. And we're like, oh shit. I don't know if health insurance covers this.
What's Drew's last name?
Mobley.
Is Drew married?
I have no idea.
Okay. Let's assume not Drew's married. Let's assume Drew's married to a woman. I don't have any knowledge of this. Mrs. Mobley, I'm so sorry to tell you.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine.
Your husband was beaten to death by at least a dozen kangaroo.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's really nothing we could bring back.
By
yeah.
Australian law, it's the kangaroo's property now.
Yeah, I think so.
And so they've done what they're going to do, and they're probably going to do more.
Well, they follow like Riddick rules out there. So, you know, they keep what they kill.
Yeah.
And there's a lot we could have done to stop it, but it's the last day of Parliament.
Yeah.
And
so we just don't have time to get to it.
It's basically a holiday.
If you have a complaint, you can take it up next year.
It's worth noting, Drew lived perfectly fine, was not killed.
Well, that story's not any good.
And he continues on to this day here at Gearbox.
Oh. Yes.
He made the gay pirate ballad in Tiny Tina.
Hey. Oh,
yeah.
Let's.
Drew is good people.
Can we get him in here for proof of life? Can somebody?
He's still got most of his limbs.
Yeah.
He's probably still got a nice little punch mark, too. There is something to be said for how intimidating a single kangaroo is.
They're so tall.
They're bigger than you think.
A bunch?
Crazy tall.
A bunch, I would think I was in like the movie Signs.
Yeah.
Like and they're way too tall, amorphous creatures just staring at me.
And they're yoked too. Like I did not realize ripped. So
they have like 16 packs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And by the end of it, he was like surrounded. And we're like, Drow.
I'm just going to talk to these guys. They seem cool.
Yeah.
So you said he was wandering down on his phone.
Uh-huh.
I'm surprised there's a reception or anything out there.
He was probably
just in Australia in general.
It was probably Angry Birds.
Do you have phones over there?
He may have sent a very strongly worded email to someone about how he was feeling in that moment.
Yeah.
But we did resolve it. We got the dorm. Everyone slept in there. It's like a summer camp for one night.
Wow. I'm sure that room smelled gross.
Were there bunks?
There were bunks and there were massive amounts of cobwebs.
Did you do a flashlight fight? What'd you do? Did you do
like lightsaber shit? Like,
what we should have done was pillow fights.
Did you pillow
fights? We were just exhausted.
Did you guys stay
blanket
forts
and
the best. Yeah. Did you watch a scary movie?
I don't even think we had a television out there.
Man. I mean, like, for kangaroos. Yeah. Yeah.
Were you?
Like, I think
could
we just
look out the
crashed.
Window and be like, "They're still out there."
Yeah. Oh, it's like The Mist, right? Like,
right.
You're all just trapped in the room and they're just out there.
Who came up with the title, the pre-sequel?
That camp was kind of wild because we had like a name brainstorming session.
Yeah, there was a whiteboard with a bunch of shit on it.
And one of the leads had been the sequel prequel because like we do because we do like goofy word shit.
The C prequel.
Yeah.
And a couple of us had kind of like jokingly suggested before then calling it the pre-sequel because we're like, what's a made up word? That sounds like some shit we would say.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it just kind of gained traction. Like I think begrudgingly, like I want to say that it won through like brute force momentum, but was not like one that some people were like super thrilled about. But we just kind of said, it's pre-sequel. Like, this is going to work.
I think when we heard Jack say it as part of the marketing, that kind of sold it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Once it came to life, you knew that, like, we've made the right call here with this dumb name.
Yes. We're a big fan of dumb names. We make crazy shit happen with it.
What else dumb? Let's talk about dumb for just another second. What else dumb did you put in this game that you're proud of?
A person named Pickle? Or what are we talking
about? That's one of them, for sure. I actually really liked Pickle.
I had nothing to do with Pickle.
I had everything to do with
Pickle. But I know a lot of people don't like Pickle.
One of our two children in the whole franchise.
Yeah. We got to be real careful with kids.
Yeah.
Do you? Are you?
It's a violent... Games tend to be violent.
My question is, in what ways have you been careful with the children in the games?
Oh, great. I'll tell you. Well, we haven't set any kids on fire. So what's up?
We did in Borderlands 2. It's off screen, but you hear it.
I'm going to take a partial on that.
Yeah.
I'm going to take half credit for that.
Okay. Yeah. I liked Pickle. Yeah. We're going to finish out this episode with a little bit of trivia. I'm going to test the knowledge that you have about the thing that you created.
I was not told that there would be a quiz.
Sure. Pandora's Moon Elpis is named after what?
Oh, I know.
You have to buzz in.
Oh, Buzz?
Buzz.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the Greek myth. Pandora's younger sister in the box is actually named Elpis.
And what is she?
Hope.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
Well done. Yeah.
I should get a bell.
I think that all came from Matt Armstrong.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask any of you for titles because that's asking a lot. But what is the band who has two songs that play over the introductory cutscene?
Oh,
the Black Something or Another. I can't remember.
They actually are Australian, though.
I think that's why they were chosen.
Yeah, I think that was the choice. Oh, man.
They were massive.
The cover of the album is very green. I can see it in...
They were massive when this game came out.
Yeah.
And then they sort of... evaporated or swam back to Australia. The songs are Black Dragon and Goodbye. Dragon.
I don't know the Goodbye one, but I remember the first one.
The Vines.
Vines.
You Vines. All fail. Australia is known for its vines.
Okay.
So that's what they're named.
Sure.
I thought they were known for their eucalyptus rainforest.
Back home and around like, my...
that's a real thing. They have one. Yeah. They have one.
We have a vine called... We have a vine called the Wait a While back home. Whereas it's big, thick vine with backwards prongs coming out of it.
But it's like vines that you have. It's not one vine, right?
Oh, no, they're...
Because the way you said it is like, we have the Wait a While.
Yeah.
And everyone has to go to it in their lifetime.
Oh, no. They're everywhere. And it gets caught in your clothes and stuff when you're going through the jungle.
They're like attacking.
So you have to wait a while to...
Is the reason so few people live in Australia because Australia doesn't like people?
Oh, yeah. Just openly hostile.
Most of the landmass there, and creatures.
Last one. As part of the pre-release promotional efforts for the game, Gearbox began pre-sequel-inspired character skins for Borderlands 2 at San Diego Comic-Con. What was set up at San Diego Comic-Con for fans to enjoy? Does anyone know?
Oh, I didn't go to that one. I can tell you about E3.
Borderlands-themed... What? Yes? No?
Oh, no, I'm confusing this with a PAX.
Borderlands-themed laser tag.
Oh, I have no idea what that is.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
It does sound awesome, doesn't it?
I was going to get some kind of food.
That sounds great.
It was a street taco.
Did we make 24 million laser tag guns?
Yes.
Because what was the point otherwise?
No, that was it.
Okay.
You
24 bazillion laser tag guns.
You would toss your laser tag gun and it would explode.
Right.
And then you would get another one and it would randomly generate.
That must be why we never did it again. Yeah. That sounds like a lot.
Right.
The last thing that we're going to do, and I'm happy that we finished talking on dumb because this is the dumbest thing we're going to do.
Oh boy.
Participation is mandatory. Don't try and get out of it. Everyone has to do their best Marcus. Saying, so you want to hear a podcast. At the end of the podcast... Every single person who's been on it will have said this line or gotten medical exemption not to say this line.
I do want to say real quick that I wish that we used Nina more after a pre-sequel. The Marcus fill-in.
I forgot about her.
Yeah, I guess she's not the Marcus fill-in.
She the nurse lady?
She's the Zed fill-in.
Yeah, she was the Zed replacement.
Yeah.
She was the big nurse.
Yeah.
Oh. Are you going to start us off, Lopez?
So you want to hear the podcast, huh?
Not bad.
I'm not going to do better than that.
Yeah, you have to try. Go. You got it.
So, you want to hear a podcast, eh?
That was terrible.
No.
Josh,
Sean Connery.
You know who to beat. It's not Higgins.
It's not going to happen.
It's not Higgins.
So, you want to hear a podcast.
That's not bad, but you won this episode.
Oh, yes. I'll
Lopez.
Take it.
You're going to go into the brackets as the winner of the pre-sequel. Yeah.
Man, finally I make my parents proud.
Thanks for joining us, Vault Hunters. If you want to show your parents that you're finally getting your life together, subscribe to the audio version of Echoes from the Borderlands wherever podcasts are available. If you've had it with your parents and you want to show them they can't keep you down anymore, you're your own person, you're doing your own thing, no one can stop you from subscribing to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/GearboxOfficial. That's where you'll see future episodes. If you play video games and you like to get every current Borderlands game all at once at a great price, go snag the new bundle, the Borderlands Collection Pandora's Box, available now on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. Huge thanks to my guests, Josh Jeffcoat, Matt Higgins, and James Lopez, as well as our behind-the-scenes heroes, April Johnson, Dakota Warren, Matthew Ward, Rob Fernandez, and Michael Cosner. Our theme song is Get Out of My Head by Wandermind. For Echoes from the Borderlands, I'm Joel Watson. See you next time, Vault Hunters.